Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
The world has changed. Are you still trying to reach people the same way? If you are, you're like most people. And unfortunately, you're going to be left behind. This is why at the Igniting Souls Conference 2022, we are taking an absolute deep dive and showing authors, entrepreneurs, and influencers how to leverage the new internet to grow their book, brand, and business. All the information is at ignitingsoulsconference.com. Get your ticket today because there are limited seats. Hope to see you there. Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner. I have with me a very special guest. I'll tell you what, let me restart this 1 second. I'm going to switch the banner.
Mute my phone.
My banner is wrong. Now we're there. Okay.
Ah, there we go.
Okay. Let's start again. Hey folks, this is Carrie Oberbrunner. I have with me a fantastic guest today. I already met her once before. I thought she'd be very good to come on board. She's a lawyer. And she has a passion for Web3, blockchain, NFTs. So this is a rare treat. Jessica, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Carrie?
I'm doing really good. And I'm very curious that, first of all, you're in Florida. Yeah. And you were sharing the other day, you shared kind of like a non-traditional path into this space. But here you are, and you kind of geek out on Web3, because I see on Twitter and we kind of found each other that way. But what got you interested into blockchain and law and all this stuff?
Yeah, you know, my blockchain journey was through a very close family member of mine.
Okay.
He's pretty much my sister. Probably introduced me to crypto maybe around, she got in maybe 8 to 10 years ago.
Wow.
Just telling me about it, kind of introducing me to the decentralization, what that means. And she went on to co-founded some really interesting projects and really introduced me to what Web3 means. So she was a co-founder of the Web3 Foundation. And I remember her telling me about this. And later I started hearing that term more and more. And I'm like, Web3, you know, what's going on here? So I practice intellectual property law. And so I'm really fascinated by brands and names of companies. And she said something that really stuck with me, and that's Web3 is for everyone.
Mm.
It's so simple, but it makes sense. It really makes sense, especially now that we've seen the community grow more and more.
Yeah.
And so I've always been interested in IP. I love working with creatives, entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my head was down trying to get as much IP experience as I could. I want to know as much as I could about trademarks, as much as I could about copyright. Those are my main focuses. And so I was working at a private law firm, got some really great exposure, you know, working on multi-million dollar deals, but also working on a trademark federal court litigation, going to trial. I mean, it's really hard to get that kind of experience as a young associate. And I did a brief stint from there during the pandemic and as a general counsel and in a couple of counties north, and decided I needed to come back. needed to come back to Miami, born and raised here.
Wow.
And focus on IP, and I've dove straight into just Web3 IP. But this is my first time really diving in and mainly focusing on that.
That's so cool. So how do you think it's going to change IP in Web3?
I think it's making us think more about how we manage our IP. So something that I know, Carrie, you know, we've kind of touched on was the ability to manage licensing payments, which is huge. The ability to use smart contract technology to do so almost effortlessly through that.
Wow. Wow.
But also just, I think we're also questioning what really incentivizes us to create. Is it those exclusive rights that we're given under copyright and patent laws to
To what
create things?
too? Yeah, like
Yeah.
web stuff, right? I mean, is this, typically government is slow. Typically government's not known as cutting edge, and so even crypto, they're starting to finally catch up. Do you think it's going to be a while that government and some of these larger entities catch up to Web3?
Yeah, so the law's always infamously behind technology, right? But I think that specific to patent and copyright, I mean, that's ingrained in our Constitution. So the founders found it so important that inventions and useful arts were mentioned there, that Congress had the ability to create exclusive rights for set periods of time because they thought that that was important in incentivizing creatives and entrepreneurs. So it's really interesting, that's really the foundation of that. But I think that as we really are hitting this new digital era, we're rethinking about what's really incentivizing us. And I think trademarks separately, not quite in our constitution, but it derives from our Commerce Clause. It's all about, how do we distinguish businesses, projects, one from another? And I think that plays a really important role in Web3, especially as it scales, especially as new people are introduced. I think that consumer protection mechanism of trademarks are really important.
So let me, can I fire at you some devil's advocate stuff today
Let's do it.
for the people who are like, what the heck? So let's just say that someone has an established brand, and take Nike for example. Why does Nike get to dominate the metaverse? Why can't somebody who is a entrepreneur, you even have this, what is it, Birkin bags back in the day, or maybe I'm saying it wrong. I don't know. I don't know fashion, but you had someone create NFTs around Birkin bags. I could see how that's different because they're creating something in the physical world. But if you go into the metaverse and it's this imaginary world and this imaginary dimension and use a swoosh symbol, how come you can say to Nike, well, they can dominate everything forever and ever and ever in future worlds? I mean, that seems a little aggressive. I don't know.
I guess I don't know if they're quite so Nike in itself has built this brand, and they do have a very strong digital presence. They actually have their own NFTs and such that they so you could say they're in the metaverse, right? So I don't know if it's quite about dominating one world and the next, but really, what are consumers? It the word Nike that swoosh means something because of what they built.
In this world.
Yeah, so is it not fair that they would get that same opportunity? And I don't know if it's even the next, right? Because the brands are all about consumer recognition. We know what that is. That word means something because what somebody else has put behind it. So is it okay that, using a different platform now, that somebody else can use that same name that someone else built? So off the back of what somebody else built. And it creates interesting questions because now people are wondering, wait, is that this brand or is this something completely different?
So let's go really crazy.
Yeah.
Let's say we're in it. Let's say, because it sounds all weird until you really start thinking about it. And I've read a lot of books on it. But let's say we're in a simulation right now. And we have no past memories, and we're fabricated. And someone comes in from another world with, I don't know, this. This thing costs them billions of dollars in the other world, but you and I have no memories of it. Because this is our first. Is this the problem that we straddle both worlds? Is that the problem that we live in the physical world and the digital world? If we really only had the digital world and we weren't going back and forth, maybe this IP thing wouldn't even be an issue. I don't know. You see what I'm saying? I know it's philosophical, but to me it's.
Can't we call it something else?
What's that?
But why do we have to call it the same thing?
Yeah, I just think that brands. Here's what I want to do. I want to reward brands that are forward thinking, and they're like, "Ooh, metaverse. Let's go file patents. Let's go jump in there. Let's go create a space. Let's go do this." But I feel like the brands who are archaic, sleeping at the wheel, their marketing departments aren't even taking advantage of this. You know, why do they get this blank check that says, well, listen, you know, you're late to the game, but because you had something in the physical world, now you get to have market share in the digital world, even though you had no, you know, it's like the entrepreneurs are the ones taking the risk.
Agreed. And I don't think that that automatically entitles you to the same kinds of protections. It very much depends on what brand we're talking about. Because as we know, you know, brand, something having a recognizable brand has tremendous value. Something that I think about is the brand Radio Shack. Have you seen them in Web3? Yeah.
I've heard about this, but talk to me. Tell me.
Yeah. So it's 100-year-old brand, right? Yeah. An electronic company.
I know about Radio Shack. I used to go.
I think I saw Newsweek call them a bankrupt electronics retailer recasting itself as a cryptocurrency platform, which is really interesting. These new owners, what they did was they took advantage of that brand recognition, and they're using that to introduce people to cryptocurrency
with Radio Shack name,
with under the Radio Shack name. And they did that by buying the rights of the brand. So I think that's so cool. Kind of how can you revive these, you know, what we can call them retro brands?
Yeah. I think Blockbuster, if I'm not mistaken, is doing something like that.
Yeah. Blockbuster is an interesting one because that actually shows almost the opposite scenario. There was a group of individuals in DAO. I don't know how
yeah, they know about it. Decentralized Autonomous Organization.
Great. Yeah. They were very interested in creating this decentralized streaming platform. Super interesting project. And they tried to purchase the Blockbuster brand. Dish Network is claiming to be the owner of that. And they were unable to come to a resolution over kind of the direction of the brand. And so they, at that group of purchasers, they actually have rebranded themselves to Rewind, R3 Wind, which is so cool to me because it's like a nod to Be Kind Rewind.
So talk to us about this. I know on the Blockbuster tapes, they used to say Be Kind Rewind, but what do you mean? What do you say?
Yeah. I think arguably it's a way to build their own brand. And I think that's what the point that I wanted to make earlier is really, you can build your own brand in Web3 and whatever that means. Yeah. you know, if you want to offer your own cryptocurrency, if you want to create an NFT project and name that, there's so much potential for you to really carve out your own brand. And you don't have to pick a recognizable one.
Okay.
You can create your own. What was Google before they put the, you know, what we call the goodwill, the heart, blood, sweat, heart, and tears into what they created? The word Google didn't mean much to us.
Yeah.
So I think that is a very important lesson, and that expands Web2, Web3. And Radio Shack is an example of how, if you want that recognizable brand, you can go and buy it and transform it into something else. There's another way to get trademark rights. It's a little risky.
Talk to me.
You can pick up a brand that's been abandoned.
Okay.
So that brand is no longer in use.
Okay.
But it's somewhat tricky because somebody can come out of the woodworks and say, no, you know, I'm still using that on this and that. So it's definitely a complicated analysis, but you can look up trademark records. You can do what we call due diligence or research into the chain of title, who owns that brand.
Okay.
And try to discern and pick it up and go with it. So there's some rumblings of people doing that.
Picking up almost like a Warren Buffett, I think in his biography, he calls them like, he used the term almost like a cigar butt that was like fully used. It had one or two puffs left. And Warren Buffett's strategy would be to go in, pick up those companies that were on their last puff, buy shares so that he could then influence the board and then like revive the company. You're almost saying that from a Web3 perspective.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Interesting. Okay.
And brands are finding a new voice in Web3. Even established brands, Take Time Magazine.
Okay.
I mean, really doing amazing work in this space. And Matthew Ball, a writer there.
Hey, hold on.
You show his book? Yeah. I mean, fantastic. Fantastic introduction. If you're trying to parse through what is metaverse, what is Web3, what is blockchain? I mean, these are all separate terms.
Yeah. It's a great book. I got the audio book. I mean, it's very, very in depth. Almost like an encyclopedia because, you know, he just goes in. I was like, dude, you're going so deep. Meaning he's talking about how much, digital presence can be on a video game screen at a time. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty minute, really, the metaverse.
But I love this stuff. Okay.
So here's a question. IBM Metaverse. IBM means a ton of things. If you Google IBM, IBM means a lot of things. Like I'm talking probably 50 different abbreviations. If I were to go buy IBM Metaverse, .com. Not saying I did, but if I did, why could they ever say, well, we need that back? Like if IBM was sleeping on the metaverse and I wasn't, and it represents 50 different terms, why can they just be like, well, we give it to us?
Yeah.
Or can they?
Why are you interested in the term IBM to begin with? I think part of that is a big piece of the analysis on whether or not we consider that fair under the law.
Yeah.
In the US here, we have a cyber squatting statute that very much focuses on bad faith and whether, you know, so there's a whole analysis there. Were you register trafficking something, using it?
So let's say I'm not using it, but look at this. IBM. I'm just trying to make a point. IBM stands for so many things. And then you put the word metaverse at the end. And metaverse now means something else. And, you know, who's to say IBM Metaverse stands for a computer company that now says, whoa, everyone's in the metaverse. We got to take advantage of that now. But, it's gone.
Yeah, I think that they have had, there's a case out there, I believe, with about IBM specifically, but going aside from, you know, that specific company, it is interesting for sure to think about, you know, there's also protections under a law for personal names, right? So what if it's your initials, initials of your name?
Let's say carrie.eth. Whoa, hey, it's my name. You know, I'm going to go to Perry, whoever bought that. Like, I feel, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like your industry, I'm attacking you. I feel like your industry is just very squishy. And I mean, the stereotype out there is like, if you, the deeper pockets win. I mean, I know that's how we originally connected with Bored Apes and Rider Rips, but there is this thing that basically says deeper pocket wins.
I don't necessarily think that that applies in that specific case that you talked
about.
No,
not in that case.
I think that's a fascinating case right there.
I agree with you. I think that there is malicious intent and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But anyway, I'm saying by writer, you know, it's one thing to make a common, a satire, but it's another one to be showcasing. We had Jimmy Fallon took down his, you know, Bored Apes because of this. Like, I don't know. To me, it seems like there's a lot of motives going on with that.
Yeah. And the lawsuit seems very much focused on the trademark element or false advertising.
I remember that. Yeah, you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It is going to be interesting to see how much, you know, defamation claims or things like that play into it. But nerds like me are very interested to see how the provenance of the blockchain play into it. So. Yeah. The fact that we can go and see who actually owns the collection, our consumer is going to be confused when they can look it up. I mean, there's all sorts of issues there.
That's
right?
A great question.
There's all sorts of issues there on the actual sophistication needed to look up a smart contract and how many people can actually do that and understand that, of course.
Okay.
But very interesting. And, interesting to think, is the creation of an NFT collection an expression, an artistic expression?
Yeah, because Andy Warhol, you know, could literally paint Coca-Cola cans, Campbell's soup, and call it pop art. Whereas it's just, this is why I'm saying it's a very, you know, we're not even talking the metaverse there. We're saying Andy Warhol picks up a Campbell's soup can, paints it, and then it gets sold for millions of dollars, and that's okay.
Yeah, and interestingly, that is not really at issue in the case either, because
that's not one.
Not right now.
But what if I were to take andywarhol.com, buy the domain, turn it into an NFT, and sell the NFT? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think we're talking about kind of different things there. But, you know, again, it's like, why are you interested in?
Because I'm making a commentary on pop culture.
Yeah, so there are cyber squatting claims. So that pertains to the domain name. There are claims in that lawsuit.
Yeah.
It has to do with, you know, RRBAYC. I believe there's also the use of the same logo in your browser as a browser image on Foundation, NFT marketplace.
Okay.
Part of the link, I believe that used BAYC. So it didn't use RRBAYC. I could be wrong there, but things like that, there were indications there, again, focusing on trademarks and consumer protection. What's really interesting is the case. So that was filed in California, which is overseen by the 11th Circuit, the federal appeals court over that. And they have found that something called initial consumer confusion can be at play. So let's say you weren't actually confused when you bought it, but at first you thought you weren't really sure. There was some confusion there. That is actually recognizable as trademark infringement in that area. Hmm. So, sorry, really nerdy, but
no, I like it. And in fact, I'm going to put you on the spot here. My new book comes out in October, and
congratulations!
Yeah. With Lee Richter, you gotta look her up. She's big in the space NFTs.
Fantastic.
Has a lot of connections. Anyway, I would love to cite you in the book and promote you. So, like, my question is, do you have any written material? I know you're on Twitter, but, like, have you ever written any articles that people could cite you in. You know, it's normal to cite. I mean, you know, he does it all the time, where you just write a little, you know, less than a couple sentences, but you give a attribution. Is that, do you have articles? Where can people find you?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I am in the middle. I have like so many topics that I want to write about. There's so much in this space. I'm in the middle of writing two right now. So
two articles.
Yes. A bit more law review-esque.
Cool.
But I'm also putting together just some resources general, because there's just so much confusion around intellectual property in this space generally.
Yeah.
That I'd love to have this kind of like one-stop shop that points to there's lots of other attorneys in this area that are looking deep and thinking deeply about these issues I'd love to talk about. And funny enough, you know, we were just talking about kind of like the retro brand revival. And that's an episode I'm in the middle of recording for a podcast.
We talked the first time and I said, you need to do a podcast. Is this for your own podcast or your guest?
It is. It's for my own.
So can we tell, I mean, this won't come out actually. We're so far ahead that this won't come out for a little bit. So by the time this episode comes out, your podcast might be out. Do you want to reveal, or do you just want us to Google you?
Yeah, we can do a reveal. The name of the plot of the podcast is Blockish IP.
Sweet.
So, yeah. So the idea is simplifying things. You know, blockish can mean a few different things.
I mean, what can it mean? So blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
What else does it mean? I don't know. Bad words? I don't know.
Like a blockhead.
Okay.
Right.
It's like nerdy IP, but Web3 IP, blockchain IP.
Yeah. I don't like the word dumb, but it's kind of like dumbed down IP. Actually, I had an introduction to those dummy books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those went huge.
Yeah. And it's funny. I had, so I did an internship. It was in the U.S. Attorney's office, this amazing trial attorney, incredible, here in Miami. And I was trying to soak up as much as I could from him, because I was just in awe of him and his ability to relate to juries, to simplify things. And I talked to him, telling him, I'm really interested in IP. And he told me the best way to really learn something is to simplify it as much as you can. Go and buy the dummies book.
Yeah. Yeah, I have dummies for philosophy, you bet. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that was also part of the inspiration behind the name. I really do. I want to simplify it. I want people to be empowered by this kind of education, empowered to help them as entrepreneurs, to help them as artists, creatives.
Because if we don't understand it, we won't get into it. Yeah,
I think so. And there are ways that we can protect ourselves. I mean, the law still applies to digital worlds. And I also think that it can really help. We hear a lot of scams in the NFT space. Mm-hmm. It can help us to be able to discern between legit projects. So you go to a link thinking that you're going to this brand.
Interesting.
But it's not. But it's not the right link, right? Like they added an extra letter in there and you didn't have that, or things like that. So that is really at the heart of trademark protection.
Wow.
Being able to protect yourself, I think, can really help people that are looking for you. Helps your brand stick out too. So I think it does play a really important role in the space.
Love it. Where can people find out more about you on social media, your website, all that stuff?
So Twitter, as you were talking about, my Twitter handle is NeerMCD, NeerMCD. It's also the name of my law firm that I founded, where I just focus on intellectual property issues. I did create a Blockish IP account. And yeah, and it's actually been fun to have.
You created an account like for your social media?
Correct. Correct. Okay. It's been fun to see people follow it when I don't really have content on it yet because I'm building it. But hopefully by the time you see this, it has great content that you'll find interesting and helpful. I also, I have numerous domains under Near MCD as well. Nearmcd.com is probably my main one.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to stay in touch because you have a ton of value to give the world and mm-hmm. you really give a good analogy of the Web3 world. And I love it. I mean, that Radio Shack thing, I didn't know. And I try to keep up with headlines. And so
you got to check out their Twitter account. It is so entertaining.
Straight up Radio Shack?
Yeah, I think so.
Like that.
You have to tread carefully, though, because they do make fun of people that will post on things. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's pretty big. It's 400K followers. And so check out our swap online store, merch, and then science and technology. So they made the shift. And you're saying that they're crypto-centric now.
Yes. They do have a white paper that you can see and kind of understand their mission a little bit more. But when you look at their Twitter, it can be extremely crude.
Kind of their brand. Their brand is to be like the anti-brand, essentially.
I don't, you know, I'm not sure. I think some of it were tactics to be funny and kind of maybe make fun of ourselves in this space. But also when I read their white paper, it was really focused on how do we get more people into crypto? How do we make it more mainstream? It's really, really interesting.
I am looking at it. It is interesting. Their website, and they are still selling like batteries and stuff too.
I think so. There might be, you know, a store or two left.
Yeah, no, you're right. They are. So that's interesting. You have blown my mind today because I used to make a spoof on them about why they went extinct because their brand was so bad. I mean, it literally was, do you know what their brand was right before they lost it?
Did they make a transition?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When they were going downhill, bad, about to crash, and now you've just told me they've resurrected. Their branding was meet your friends at the shack. Like, what does that even mean? That was their motto. Like, not just do it, Nike. It was meet your friends at the shack. Like, what does that even mean?
Everyone needs batteries.
So they've clearly, I'm going to use this now forever about how they've clearly gone from Web2 to Web3. This is why we need to hang out, Jessica.
We can hang out. This is fun.
You blew my mind.
So many people doing such creative things in this space. I mean, we could go on and on just talking about cool things people are doing.
Block IP. Someday I aspire to be on your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Let me know. Yeah. All right, fine. Well, thank you
so much. I'm excited about your book, by the way.
Well, I'm going to quote cool. you. I'm going to quote you in it. We'll throw some traffic your way. And, you know, I really think that the world needs, seriously, like IP lawyers who understand Web3. I really do. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Talking to you. We'll see you. Bye. Care.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.